Game Mini Number 2, Feminism in Horror, brought to you by the Undercover Caves Podcast Network. Hello everyone, and welcome to a second episode of the Real Romance Theme Mini. I'm your host, or rather, I'm your co-host this time, Robert Andrick, also known as Banffing Bob, and the one taking the reins today is our host, Brittany.
Hello. Are you not always a co-host?
I am, but I always end up saying that I'm the host and you're the co-host, when really it's almost much more your child nowadays than it is mine.
Hmm. Alright, so today we're going to be talking about feminism in horror movies, and I'd like to start it off with a little disclaimer. Some of these topics might be uncomfortable. I did kind of talk some about domestic violence, which it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there's definitely some, like, rape-ish kind of themes in there. Yeah.
It's all about horror, so there's rape,
murder,
the idea of getting tortured.
Just a disclaimer for anyone, we're not going to go too graphic.
But this is a trigger warning that if you are set off by things like rape or murder, torture, that...
Maybe skip this one.
Mm-hmm. Or at the very least, listen to something else that we have that's a bit more upbeat.
We kind of dove into this topic by watching three different movies. Primarily, we're going to focus on one of them, but the movies are Prevenge. I think it's British. We watched Audition, mm-hmm. which is a Japanese film, and then we watched Jennifer's Body.
Which is about as American as it gets.
It's very American, and we're going to kind of focus on that one. I did some research, and so we're just going to dive in onto feminism in horror movies and how, even though that seems like a contradiction, there's actually a lot of feminism in horror movies.
And, so, you know, this really is Brittany's baby. She's put a lot of time and effort into it, and me, while I'm a guy who appreciates a good feminist horror movie as much as the next, she really dives in, so hopefully you can tell just how much effort we're putting in on this one.
So, first we're going to talk about representation and, you know, how you see girls in movies. I don't know if you guys have heard of this. You probably have. It's called the Bechdel test. And basically, it's if there are two female characters in the movie and they talk about something that is not a man. Unfortunately, a lot of movies don't pass the Bechdel test. Mm-hmm. But horror movies actually pass approximately 70% of the time, which is the second highest category under music films. So I thought that was pretty impressive, all things considered, considering you see how many women you see as victims. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, like, the worst movies were war movies, westerns. But you see a lot of female protagonists in movies nowadays, especially. But it's, like, it's always had, we've always had female protagonists. We had, you know, Laurie in Halloween, mm-hmm. Ripley in Aliens. I have a couple others, but some more recent examples were in Happy Death Day, we had a female protagonist, and The Invisible Man, which came out this year, had a really good female protagonist who went from being a victim to being very proactive in saving herself. And then you have something like Cam, where even though she's also victimized, she's very much not weak. She's helping, trying to get her life back. And I loved that movie in that it didn't shame her for being a sex worker. Mm-hmm. It just really was kind of all about her journey to get her livelihood back.
And the thing about a lot of horror movies is that women are told, hey, you're the victim, you're the one who's going to get killed. But oftentimes, especially in the genre, is they kind of break out and they're the ones who to overcome and get revenge on the killer. And I absolutely love that.
I would make the argument that horror is one of the more progressive genres of film as far as women goes. Now, we've still got a long way to work people of color in horror, but, you know, we'll get there.
If a black guy's, like, the third one to die, it's like, hey, he survived longer, you know?
I mean, we're getting there. We had Get Out, which was fantastic.
Oh, Jordan Peele just does great things, and then he did it with Us, too.
And then we're gonna have Candyman, which looks amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about that. Really, what horror is about for women is it tells us that, you know, your fears are real. The chances of you getting victimized by a man are pretty real. I actually looked up some statistics on what your chances of getting victimized by a man are, and so that's 33% of women in their lifetime will likely be victimized. Mostly it focused on the group between the ages of 18 to 30. That's mm-hmm. usually when you're going, when no, it's going to happen.
No, when you say victimized, are you talking about any and all sorts of assault?
I'm talking about physical violence and sexual violence, stuff like that.
Okay. So not everybody is murdered, right? Sometimes it's, you know, beatings and domestic violence.
33% of women do not get murdered.
It's like, why are all the girls missing? Murder.
In the U.S., it averages about 20 people a minute. I mean, and that's not all women, but then that ends up working out to about 10 million people a year. So
that's probably not even factoring in, like, multiple victimizations, or is it, like, individual
right,
events?
Right, because the chances of you being re-victimized are pretty good.
Yeah, if you're in a relationship with someone who beats you, chances are it's not just going to be the once.
Even if you leave that person, the chances of you coming into another relationship where you get victimized are pretty high. I don't have the exact statistics. Like I said, I just looked up a few. But actually, 1 in 6 women will likely be the victim of either an attempted or a completed rape in their lifetime.
Wow.
That's a lot. And 99% of partner violence against their other partner is a female being victimized by their male partner.
So you beat me black and blue, that's not,
I mean,
normal.
That it happens, but it's not the majority.
No, I'm saying, like, you specifically. Oh. Beating the shit out of me.
Shut up.
She just did it.
So, when it comes to horror movies, we see that sort of stuff. There's rape revenge films, movies like I Spit on Your Grave and The Last House on the Left. You see these movies where these women are victimized and tortured and left for dead, and sometimes it's the woman themselves that gets the revenge on the man, and sometimes it's someone they know or something, like, you know, anything like that. But that is basically kind of a political commentary on, you know, how men treat women, and they just expect to get away with it.
Yeah, like, one of the first movies I saw, like, horror growing up, I might have been like 12 or 13, I saw Monster. About Eileen's, what is it,
Vornos?
Vornos, yeah.
One of the few serial killers that's female.
Yeah, it stars Charlize Theron.
Mm-hmm.
And it really got me because it definitely goes there and shows, hey, she's a sex worker, but she also gets taken advantage of. And it turns into kind of a revenge story where she's going after people and killing them.
And I mean, we don't know how much of that is true. Like, because we can only go by her accounts. Obviously, the men are dead.
Yeah.
But we do know that she was likely victimized by lots of men, and sex workers get victimized a lot.
At one point, you know, she just snapped. And it's like, well, instead of going after Johns to make a buck, now it's...
Well, and even if the man she killed wasn't the one that victimized her, it kind of just brings up those feelings.
Right.
And you see that in horror movies where a female, like, because a lot of times you don't get revenge like that. A lot of times rapists go unprosecuted, unfortunately.
Yeah. They go free, or they're a family member, and so they, oh, you know, we'll cover it up, or whatever. And there really is no justice.
So sometimes seeing that in a movie where a rape victim gets to, like, come back and kill him, like, I think it, what was that movie called? Straw Dogs? Do you remember that one?
I think I do.
And, like, they, like, raped his wife and all that stuff, like, right in front of him, and then they, yeah, like, that movie was...
Heck,
it was brutal.
Even though it's not a horror, even in The Boys, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to our other stream mini, definitely check that out. It's all about some superhero shows. But in The Boys, Bully Butcher's his whole character-driven plot is revenge on his wife getting raped and killed by Homelander.
Well, and in one of the movies we watched, Audition,
mm-hmm.
I mean, even though the man she victimizes in this movie doesn't actually do anything physical to her, I mean, he's kind of a scumbag. Basically, he holds auditions because his wife passed away from cancer, we assume. He holds auditions to find a wife, even under the pretense that it's for a movie.
Right. But this isn't like an ongoing thing where he's like constantly auditioning. Like, his co-workers, like, hey, we make movies. We should totally make this movie where the main female lead is someone who you would be interested mm-hmm. in. So you pick someone out of all of these actresses and pick your top 30 or whatever, and then we'll interview them all, and whoever you like, ask her out on a date.
And
it's really kind of creepy.
She ends up, like, basically torturing him. But if you look at her backstory, she was tortured by a lot of different people over the years. Mm-hmm. So for her, even though he didn't actually do anything torture-worthy, she's probably reliving that trauma over and over again. So,
yeah,
not to say that her victims got what they deserve, but in her mind, they did.
Right. And in the movie, she's, like, really kind of meek and reserved and to herself. But going through and seeing the underlying stuff, she was abused by her father, or was it her stepfather?
Her stepfather and her, like, aunt.
Mm-hmm.
She lost the ability to dance.
Right, because she had, like, a hip something.
Yeah, so her whole life has been just one sadness after another, and then her partner cheated on her, so she killed him, and, well, she tortured him, left him in a sack for a while.
Yeah, and cut off his fingers and tongue and stuff. our main male character comes into play. She's like, I need you to love me and only me. He has a son and a dog. And even though he lost his wife, he also thinks very fondly
of his pictures
of his dead wife. And she finds out, and suddenly it's not all about her, and she ends up taking revenge on him. She loses it. Yeah, she loses her damn mind. And it was very creepy and disconcerting. But in my opinion, the movie itself, there was a lot of buildup to it for it to get
so good. Creepy. Yeah.
But when it was... Whew.
Then we've got final girls. The concept of being a final girl.
Now, what is a final girl?
So if you watch most slasher films, usually, but not all, there's usually a group of teenagers or, you know, college students, and they get picked off one by one until at the end, there's a final girl who usually defeats the evil. Not always. Sometimes she also dies. But typically, it's the person who overcomes the evil by killing them.
Every horror movie.
I mean, a lot of horror
movies. Right? I Know What You Did Last Summer has a final girl. Most of the, like, Halloween's, Jason's, Freddy Krueger's.
Right.
Even though there's a male and female mixed cast, a girl is the last one, and usually.
Sometimes you'll have a couple who makes it out and who weren't a...
They weren't romantic at the beginning, but now they are.
And occasionally you'll have a final guy, but typically it's a final girl. No.
But why do you think that is? Like, why...
I think it's a commentary on the fact that women have to overcome such evil in lives to get anywhere decent. And that just in our daily lives, we live through such quote-unquote torture. And just, like, basically we have to get past that to get to a happy place.
Yeah, personally, I think this is coming from my perspective, is that there is an idea in society where man is going to bail you out, right? If there's some sort of attack, if there's anything that, oh, help, I'm the damsel in distress. Don't worry, I'm the male hero. I'll come and save you. And the reason it's so good in a horror movie to have it as a final girl, because suddenly that safety blanket of a big, strong man is gone.
Right.
And it's just you being vulnerable and quote-unquote weak versus this monster or this villain. And that makes it even scarier.
And some final girls are better than others.
Yeah.
And you have that concept. They kind of make fun of that concept in Cabin in the Woods. Mm-hmm. So they, at the end, you find out that this is a ritual and that they have the same stereotypes, which you always see in horror movies. Because there are. These stereotypes are almost always in horror movies.
Cabin in the Woods is so good about showing horror tropes.
And at the end, you have the quote-unquote virgin who can either die or live as long as she suffers.
Right.
And that's pretty much what a final girl is. They're usually more chaste than the other. Because there's usually at least one slutty friend. Not that that's very
right, because what are the five on that, right? There's the stoner, the jock, the scholar, the slut, and the virgin. Now, in this one, she's not like a virgin.
But deal with what they got.
Right, and she's more of a,
a goody two-shoes.
She's a bit reserved, right? She's not outgoingly slutty like her friend is, which, by the way, is really shameful. But for this movie, it's like,
Well, they kind of make fun of it. Because they pump in those hormones to make them really horny, you remember?
Yeah.
And so they make fun of, like, the slutty friend.
It's like she's not normally this slutty, but because it's a horror film, she has to be, like, taking off her top and all this
stuff. Right. And I think back in the day they used to do it because it was kind of a commentary on how women were seen as, you know, they should be chaste. The best women.
But not like in Scream, right? When they chase Drew Barrymore, they literally chase her ass.
No, like, it's a commentary on how, like, sex in films equals death. Like...
Mm-hmm. No, and they made fun of that again with Carmen Electra in the first Scary Movie.
Right, you have sex, you die in a horror movie.
Yeah, you run away, you're naked.
Sometimes you die during sex.
No, when you started saying that, I was actually thinking of Evil Dead, where she's getting raped by that tree. Or the tentacle
porn. Not exactly what I meant, but yeah.
But it's true, they kind of equate sexualizing women with murdering them.
Right, and it kind of is talking about, like, men in power. Like, well, they had sex with the woman, now they kill her. Like, well, she wasn't worth anything anymore.
Yeah.
But more and more, we're kind of moving away from that trope. It's not used nearly as much as it used to be. Like, that was definitely a very 80s kind of thing. This is kind of a fun fact. That, on average, it takes twice as long for women in horror movies to die than the men on screen.
Why is that? Just because people like seeing women?
Because the women are, you know, more the protagonists. So the men get their deaths over with. We don't care about them at all. So we're even women that die in the movies, we get to see them longer. You get to see the terror in their face longer. They did a study and they showed that there's 5 times as much fear shown on women's faces in horror movies than there are on men's.
Right, so if it's a man, he'll just get, like, killed. And he's like, oh no, this is the way it was meant to be. While the woman, it's like, oh shit, I am having these emotions.
Men don't get scared,
men,
I guess.
Men, they're just dead.
In European movies, they're actually a lot more sexually liberated over there. And some women in films, like, they use sex and they get what they want and they use it to kill men. Like, a lot less taboo over there than it is here.
No, you remember when we watched that movie Teeth?
That was so creepy.
Okay, so we didn't watch it for the podcast, but really shortly, there's a woman who finds out that her vagina has teeth in it, like razor-sharp teeth, and it's called dentata. And so whenever somebody tries to violate her downstairs at all,
yeah,
it ends up, like, eating them. So if it's, like, a finger, now you have less fingers. You can guess what happens when, you know, she gets taken advantage of.
Right.
And so she uses it to her advantage, and suddenly it becomes a chopped weenie festival.
And that kind of segues into, like, puberty in movies. It, like, we see so many movies where as a female is becoming a woman and not a child anymore, she becomes kind of a quote-unquote monster. You've got, like, The Exorcist, where she's clearly getting older and whatnot, and she literally becomes possessed by a demon because she's going through puberty, basically.
Yeah.
And then you've got movies like Carrie, where she gets her period in the movie for the first time, and it, like, freaks her out. And
right,
then,
and the mother has nothing to say about it. It's just like,
You're a monster.
Yeah, you're a demon for this.
And then later, you see the blood kind of mirrored when they dump it on her head, and she literally becomes
a blood monster.
A blood monster. And so it kind of, like, puberty is kind of a hot topic, especially on women. Like, they kind of make it seem like they're dirty, but then you see movies like The Witch, where, you know, as they're growing older, like, they become sexually liberated, you know?
Right.
Well, I know we didn't watch it, but that's what Ginger Snaps is about. Like,
oh, yeah?
It's basically about she's getting, you know, older and becoming a woman, and suddenly she's a hairy monster,
right, but
that kills men.
She gets bit, but still.
But it's supposed to mirror that.
Right.
And then we can talk about other monstrous women. And if you watch in movies, you see women and men. The way they kill is different. Women tend to kill more as, like...
They kill smart, I think.
They do kill smarter, and they kill more for revenge. A lot of women in horror movies are killing more for revenge, not for themselves, but maybe someone they knew, but sometimes for themselves. But when you see men as monsters in horror movies, they're just killing because they like doing
right,
it.
Right, because they are monsters. Like, you think of a movie like Misery, and, you know, she is a fanatic, right? What is her name? Annie Wilkes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Annie is a fanatic for this book character, and when we find out that she's gonna die...
She loses
Annie,
it.
Not Annie.
Misery, main character.
Misery, the main character. When she finds out Misery is going to be killed off in the book, she loses her shit.
And she's like, you have to write a new ending.
And she'll do anything to make sure it gets done.
Because for her, Misery is a real person. Like,
right.
It's a real character to her. She's very isolated.
And she has a maternal instinct toward her. She wants to make sure that this fictional character has her best interest in her.
Right. And then you've got pregnancies, mystical pregnancy type things.
Like Rosemary's Baby?
Right. Where suddenly the thing growing inside of you may not be your baby.
Right. It's either a monster or the Antichrist. Because, right, we had in Good Omens there was an Antichrist baby. Or it wasn't a pregnancy, but it was being raised as a child. But you have Rosemary's Baby, you have Good Omens, you have...
There's lots of them.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Well, and one we watched was Prevenge. And
that was the British one, right?
Right. By the way, shout out to Alice Lowe. She is not only the star of this movie, but the writer and the director, and she did it while she was pregnant.
Right, so it was a literal pregnancy that she was making this pregnant movie about, and she's like, fuck it, I'm just going to be preggers all over the place and write it and direct it.
I don't know if that was just like a happy accident or what. Basically, her partner dies on the day she finds out she's pregnant. She thinks it was not just an accident. These people that were with him are at fault.
Mm-hmm.
So she's miserable, and then all of a sudden, the baby starts talking to her.
Right, and it's kind of an idea. Is it like, is it in her head? Is she losing her mind? Or does her baby know what happened?
And so the baby starts prompting her to kill these people. like, violent, bloody, stab him in the neck kind of...
Right, and we find out in the movie that it was a big rock climbing accident.
The rope was cut.
Right, he ends up falling to his death. And so, one by one, this pregnant mama is going after all these people. And one guy she seduces, one woman she's in a job interview for, and she ends up, like, literally turning the table on her.
And these mystical pregnancies just show women's fears of just, like, how they're growing a monster inside them sometimes, and how you feel like your body's been taken over by some other force. And then they also kind of highlight how little say we have in our own bodies. If you look at Rosemary's Baby, her husband tricked her into getting pregnant, a demon baby.
Yeah.
And then, like, was it her husband or the neighbors? It doesn't matter.
I think that the neighbors did the tricking, but the husband...
kind of went along with it. Yeah. And then at the end, this demon comes out, and it's not even, like, hers anymore. So, it's just kind of...
She's like, she was no better than a incubator.
Right.
She grew the baby, she went through all the crap, having to do the, you know, sickness and all that.
And then just ripped away from her.
No, and a lot of people, I know that we haven't been pregnant yet, but there is kind of this fear of pregnancy, too, because you don't know what your body's going to do. You don't know what's going to happen with your mood swings, your, you know, sickness, what goes through your mind. And then there's the whole idea of postpartum depression and new motherhood and being treated differently because you're a mom. Like, there's a lot of things that go along with motherhood that are scary. And that's a whole nother genre of feminism in horror where, you know, it talks about being a mom or motherhood. Like, there's Hereditary, there's Mother, there's so many.
So then we get kind of to the main movie we want to talk about, Jennifer's Body, where not only does this movie have a female protagonist, the quote-unquote villain is also a female, even though I would argue that the men in the band are also kind of the villain.
Yeah, and this one also has a female director, so that kind of tells you, like, it's not coming at you with male gaze glasses. Like, the women are making the decisions to how things are being filmed.
And I just want to say that the biggest crime around this film is that you probably haven't heard of it because it had such a bad marketing team. And surprise, surprise, it was a completely male marketing team. They didn't market this movie the way it should have been marketed, and basically people didn't really hear about it. It wasn't marketed towards females. There is a lack of...
They're like, this is a sex demon, right? Look at her boobies. This is Megan Fox. She's so hot.
The most horror film fans are female. So the statistics show that 60% of horror fans are female, which is a large portion of them. In fact, it is a majority.
I mean, look at it. Like, true crime? Women love true crime.
Oh yeah, women are all about true crime.
You know, I think they like horror because, like, not only is it really feminist, like you're saying, but it's a way to kind of get over your fears as, like, these things could happen.
Well,
so
also,
if you watch them play out, you're like, okay, this is what to expect.
It validates your fears. It's
right.
Kind of like every day, you know, I think about things that could happen to me when I leave the house. And watching a horror movie, it kind of makes you feel better. It's like, well, you know, things really could happen to me. It makes it justifiable that you take all these safety precautions, like carrying your keys between your fingers, or having a can of pepper spray, or learning self-defense.
I just thought of something really deep, I think. Men watch movies for wish fulfillment, right? You think of all the movies, like they're cowboys and astronauts and superheroes and things, while women watch movies to kind of, like, almost like decompress and watch someone else do their thing. Like, you don't really wish to do some of the things that women do you?
Well, depends on the movie.
But, like, you don't want to be the final girl, but you want to see her win.
If I have to be in a horror movie, I do want to be the final girl.
Yeah.
Of the people to be, unless you're the person that doesn't go on the trip, the final girl is the one to
She's
be.
She's the one.
Like, you don't want to be the second slutty girl.
I mean, some people do.
Let me be clear, like, I'm not slut shaming. That's just what they basically, I mean, that's the trope.
Yeah, that's what they play it off of.
I have no problem with, you know, women and their sexuality, but that's what it is. In the movie, they're the quote-unquote slutty girl.
Right, but in this story, the hero, there's no guy hero in this whole thing. All the men
are terrible.
They're secondary.
So there's Needy and there's Jennifer.
Now, Needy is short for Anita, so that's not her literal name.
But they only call her
Needy. They call her Needy.
She is a nerd and very quiet and reserved. And then you've got Jennifer, who's a cheerleader. It's very outgoing, very much the popular girl. Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they're best friends. And it's very hard to explain.
They grew up being friends, but you don't really understand why they drift apart. And even Needy's boyfriend is like, I don't know why you're friends with her. You literally have nothing in common.
Because Needy is like your stereotypical book nerd. She wears glasses. She dresses nice, but not like outgoing. She doesn't overdo her makeup.
Well, I think some of it is Needy has been forced down by mm-hmm. Jennifer.
Who goes out of her way to be just beautiful.
They talk about it kind of briefly. They're going out to a bar and Needy's like, well, when Jennifer tells me to wear something nice, it means I can't show off my tits because that's her thing.
Right. She says, I can show off my stomach, but I don't want to put on like bigger makeup or hair than her. But I do need to look presentable.
I need to look nice, but not nicer than Jennifer.
Not too nice.
So they get to this bar and they go over to the band because Jennifer is got it bad for the lead singer because he's salty. That's what she says. Was that a thing that they said back then?
No, I think that's before our version of salty came around. Like, oh, you know, you got an attitude. You're salty.
Salty means attractive.
Kind of like how we call people a snack. They were trying that earlier than a snack.
I mean, it's 2009, so...
Right, so that's like a full decade ago.
We would have been teenagers, but still. The band member, for some reason, becomes convinced that Jennifer is a virgin.
Right, because they're stupid.
I don't know.
No, they really should have killed Needy.
So they take Jennifer after there's this horrible fire in the bar.
Right, a freak fire, which we don't know who sets it or
I'm
why.
I'm pretty sure the band members did it, because if you notice, there's no one freaking... They're not freaking out about it. But think about
like,
it.
But they're like, oh, these girls, they got out alive. Here, come with us in our creepy van.
They set the fire to hide the fact that they were going to murder someone and hope that the people would just think she perished in the fire. That's my theory.
That makes a lot of sense.
So they take her. Needy goes back to her house because she won't go. And then Jennifer just shows up at her house and just vomits this, like, black, needly, nasty stuff.
It's not even, like, real tar. Like, it looks like it's almost alive. Kind of like an evil flubber.
And then the next day, she shows up at school just
nothing
normal.
Happened.
And slowly you find out that Jennifer is eating boys mm-hmm. to stay beautiful. She has become a succubus. Because she was not actually a virgin, she becomes a demon herself when they tried to sacrifice her to get fame and fortune. Though they still get the fame and fortune, unfortunately,
now the demon lives inside of Jennifer's body. Hence the title, roll credits. But yeah, she kills a foreign exchange student from India, and she kills the head jock, and then she kills like an emo kid.
She does not discriminate.
No, she kills all of them. And one thing that she does is, because she's this hot, you know, cheerleader type, she knows that all the boys want to be with her, and she uses that to her advantage.
Right.
By kind of like luring them in.
Like a succubus. Hmm. And there's also this undertones of sexuality and how maybe Jennifer isn't truly like straight, at least not fully straight. She's definitely really into Needy. I don't know if she's full on bisexual or
maybe a
repressed lesbian.
No, I don't think she's a lesbian. I think she's bi. But I do think they reference that they played boyfriend-girlfriend at slumber parties when they were younger.
Right.
So clearly they're like daydreaming about a little relationship, even if it is kind of taboo.
Well, if you think about it, look at how Jennifer has sex with men. She talks about having sex with the police guy, and she uses it to keep
the police under her belt so that if she breaks the law...
So she can get alcohol and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, Jennifer was using her sexuality towards boys
as a
weapon.
Yeah.
She even talks about it. She's just like, she grabs Needy's boobs and goes, point these in the right direction, and they're a weapon. So maybe she wasn't really that into men, but she knew that she could manipulate them to get what she wants.
Right, because she's young, she's hot, she clearly has, like, motive to do things in her life. Like, she wants to get things done, and the best way to do that is by sleeping right with the right men.
But when you see her with Needy and, like, her kind of relationship with her, it's very clear that she is at least half in love with Needy.
Yeah.
And that's why she's stuck around so long.
And Needy is kind of enamored with Jennifer, even if it isn't in a romantic sense.
Yeah.
I think it's almost like a, you know, I want to be you. Kind of
right.
Like that song Girl Crush, you know?
There's this back and forth between the two of them where they're best friends, but, like, Needy knows that she really needs to get rid of Jennifer.
And Jennifer's taking advantage of Needy, too, because, like, she keeps, like, popping up and, you know, throwing up tar all over everything and being all bloody and stuff, and she has to explain it away.
And I love this movie. I know this was my second time to see it, but your first time. So, I mean, what are your opinions on the movie?
I thought it was a great movie. Okay, there's a lot of really funny puns that Jennifer tells. It's very sexual without being nude. Like, there is no nudity in this movie. I don't know about the unrated version. It kind of teases a lot of things, like there's side boob and backs and things. And you kind of
see her, she's definitely naked when she's swimming in the lake.
Right, but there's not like a close-up right on her butt. It's all very cinematic, which is also how you can tell a woman directed it.
No gratuitous nudity.
No, but two gorgeous women star in this. But you have Amanda Seyfried, Megan Fox, two gorgeous women.
Who do a great job.
They do awesome. And they could have done a frontal nude scene. It was right there. There was a sex scene where two of the main characters are having sex and it's very intimate. They could have, but they didn't.
I really liked that scene where they kind of contrast the two having sex, like they're in
a loving consensual relationship.
And then Jennifer just straight up killing this dude.
Like ripping his pants off and acting like she wants him, but luring him into a trap.
And then she like rips his throat out.
Yeah. I liked the villain, the way they played off the villain. And it also kind of explores the band a little bit more, too, when you find out more about them. But really, it focuses on Jennifer and the things she's going through in the changes with a demon in her body. And then you have Needy, who is trying to cope with her best friend being a demon and if she actually wants to kill her.
There's also a couple cameos. There's a pre-Marvel Chris Pratt in this.
Mm-hmm. And also J.K. Simmons, which yes. For no fucking reason, this dude's got like a claw hook thing for a hand, and it is so funny because he's an English teacher and he goes up in the front of the class and he's talking and doing his thing, and then out of nowhere he just like lifts up his hand and it's a claw and it doesn't draw attention to it at all, and it is so funny. Like,
it really is.
It's just like a gag that you weren't expecting.
I also really liked Amy Sedaris was in it as the mom for no reason. Like, mm-hmm. It was just good. But there are some really funny puns. She calls it a weddy.
Yeah, instead of a woody. But there's all things about sex and things about organs and acts, and but they make it funny and punny, and I love it. And like the very line that she says, she gets stabbed in the heart, and then she says,
my tit,
and then he's like, no, your heart, and then she ends up dying, which is like, it's funny, and it shows the contrast between the two characters, right? Jennifer, obsessed with her body and her sexuality, she's automatically thinking, you stabbed my titty, and then Needy's like, no, I love your heart.
I also really like when they like get into this word battle at kind of the climax of the movie, and Needy's just like, you're such a jerk, and Jennifer's just like, wow, great insult there, Hannah Montana.
No, and it also shows when the movie came out. The height of Hannah Montana, they had to throw in a Miley Cyrus reference.
There were several references. I think there was even an X-Men reference.
There was an X-Men reference, but we're not going to talk about that. If you want X-Men references, you definitely want to go listen to our other stream mini.
But yeah, the reason you haven't heard of this movie, if you haven't, is because they really did market it only towards young men, and it was all about, like, look at Megan Fox's body. Like,
when really it was so much more than that. Me, I was like, a teenager at the time.
Look at this poster. Maybe I should post this on our Instagram.
That's hot.
Okay, so let me describe this actual poster. It says, from the creator of Juno, and it's just Megan Fox in this red low-cut top and a skirt, sitting at a desk, very sexualized looking, and it says she's got a taste for bad boys, and there's just like a little bit of blood coming out of the side of her mouth, mm-hmm. and a dead hand sticking out of her backpack. It's very much like, look at Megan Fox. She's sexual, and in this movie, in no place does it even talk about Amanda Seyfried on the poster.
Like, it literally just says, Megan Fox. When this is Needy's story as much as hers, if not more so. Needy is the main character. And by the end, like, in the beginning, you see the movie start out with Needy in prison, and throughout the movie, you find out why. We know it's because she ends up killing Jennifer, who is possessed by a demon, but nobody knows this. Nobody believes this.
And I just think this was a fantastic feminist, vintagey kind of slasher movie that you don't really see anymore. Not, like, the same way. And I thought it was kind of campier, but it was dark comedy. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I think it's a great example of feminist horror. And I just think you should go watch it. It's a really good movie.
Right. It kind of leads into another movie that's going to be coming out very soon. It's called Freaky. We wanted to watch it for this one, or maybe this month, but it actually doesn't come out until November, and I think it's going to be streaming on demand.
Which, it's basically the horror equivalent of...
Freaky Friday.
Yeah.
There's an axe murderer around town or something, and then there's this young cheerleader. They end up having a scuffle, and a Freaky Friday situation happens, so now they switched bodies. Kind of like Rob Schneider in The Man, only horror. And it looks really fun, and I'm really excited to watch that and see the kind of feminist ideals that they show throughout that.
So one more last point I've got to make is we kind of have to look at the opposite of feminism in horror movies, because you've got horror movies are very phallic. You think of all the like weapons and how just it's the act of stabbing a woman.
Oh yeah, just, like, Freddy Krueger is like super terrifying.
Sexual. Yeah. And you've got the chase where you're chasing them down. It's basically a man's version of just sexualizing and degrading her.
And there's a lot of pinning women down, women falling over.
And they're always half naked for no reason.
Well, it's not for no reason. It's because it puts people in seats.
Sex sells.
Sex sells.
To really wrap it all up, we got some examples of some really good horror movies out there that are very feminism, but still just good horror movies. We mentioned a few. These are just movies we've watched. Now, I'm sure there are plenty more, but I only wanted to include movies that we've watched that I can verify, yes, they are good.
Right, they're very female friendly. So, or not friendly, but heavy.
I think most of these have female protagonists. I think all of them do. Midsommar, which I know you weren't a huge fan of, but I loved.
It is a well done movie, even if I wasn't a fan.
And then you've got The Babadook, which also has a female director.
Right, and I don't really think of The Babadook as a female story, but it is. It's all about the mom.
It's about moms and depression and dealing...
And monsters living under the bed.
And dealing with being a single mom and how sometimes you want to kill your child.
Absolutely.
And then, like you said, you mentioned Teeth earlier, and then we've got Pan's Labyrinth, which you don't really think of, but I mean, the two main characters...
Are the mom and the daughter.
Right, and it's all about their relationship.
Now... Pan's Labyrinth does dive really heavy into her mom's story, too. So I'll give you that one.
And then you've got The Descent, which we both love.
Terrifying, and a completely female cast.
And then you've got Black Christmas, which I know there's the old one and there's a new one. I know you weren't a huge fan of the new one.
The new one was just, it was overkill for me. I felt like Jennifer's Body was the right amount. It talked about the same things, but it also was like jokey about it.
To be fair.
Black Christmas was very cut and dry.
Black Christmas wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me at all.
And then we've got Resident Evil, where even though Alice does wake up in various states of undress, she kicks ass. She goes out, kicks ass, just because she can. And then you've got like movies like You're Next, where...
That's the one with their masks, right?
Right, and they're terrorizing this family, but turns out she grew up on like a compound where she learned all this self-defense, and she kicks the villain's butt. She turns it around on them and they're next.
Well, even in like The Hunt, the political thriller that we saw a little while ago,
those two ended up being female, the main villain and the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Or hero.
Yeah, anti-hero kind of.
And then you've got like Hide and Seek.
Yeah.
That one has a female protagonist. There's so
and
many.
And instead of being the final girl, she's like the only girl.
I mean, she is the final girl.
Killer.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, because they keep accidentally killing fucking housemaids.
But there's lots of great horror movies. And if you want to send us your favorite suggestion for a female horror movie, I think we've more than made the point that horror is the biggest feminist genre out there. I think
one could make the argument that rom-coms are for girls, or you know, documentaries or whatever, but horror really does like bring women out to movie theaters in droves.
But see, my problem with rom-coms is that it's all about the relationship and finding a man will make her happy.
Well, there's some things like Bridesmaids and things which would be considered chick flicks, but yeah, the traditional romantic comedy is...
I shouldn't be limited to watching a chick flick because I'm a girl. I should get to watch every single genre of movie just as equally as you do. Okay. But unfortunately, my representation isn't that great in most. You look at action films, mm-hmm. there's very few female-led action films.
Right. I'm gonna tell a story that might get me in trouble. One of my very first dates, and I think it was like middle school, it was a horror movie. Now me, I was raised and I didn't really like horror movies, but I liked this girl and I asked her, hey, what kind of movie do you want to go to? And she wanted to go see No Evil, the movie with Kane. I think it was made by, like, MTV or something. I had no idea what it was or, you know, anything, but I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. So really, like, horror movies are great for date nights, but not always because the guy wants to see it, because it's a really good way to kind of, like, bond over a shared fear.
How many horror movies have I drugged you to?
So many. And how many have I been like, I have to go see that one?
Not very many.
Right, because you also have an interest in it. You very rarely don't have interest in a horror movie that I'm excited about.
I very rarely am like, oh, let's watch a horror movie. And I'm like, nah, we shouldn't. Like, yeah. I am almost always...
You're dragging me.
What? But at least once a month, I'm like, we should watch something scary. And I'm...
But God forbid we go to a haunted house where the guy comes, jumps out, and makes you pee your pants.
Okay, I want to see it on screen, but I have space issues. And I do, real quick, I do want to cite a couple sources. Some things I just took from, like, various websites, but I did spend quite a lot of time reading. It was an article on Medium.com written by The Outspoken. I read quite thoroughly and took several notes from there, and then Wikipedia, and then the National...
Always helpful.
The National Database on on Violence and Statistics.
Cue Captain America meme. The internet. So helpful.
But... I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that horror films are feminist?
Or is it just an excuse for guys to watch women run around in their underwear?
I would say that the best horror movies usually have a woman protagonist.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't even talk about, like, Aliens with Ripley.
I know, I kind of briefly mentioned it earlier, but...
Right, but, like, it, you know, not traditional horrors, but just strong female leads with scary sci-fi themes.
She's definitely a better protagonist than the... other film that's related, Predator.
Yeah.
She's definitely a better protagonist than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. I would 100% agree. And that's where we should leave it.
No offense to Arnold.
Female protagonist in a horror movie, you
are
know,
superior.
4 out of 5 times, definitely superior.
Agreed.
So, follow us on all of our socials. We're at RealRomanceUCPN on Twitter, at RealRomance on Instagram and TikTok, and we have a Real Romance Facebook page. If you want to follow our personal stuff, Brittany's at BookNerd528, that's on Instagram, and then I'm at BamfingBob on Twitter, and we
and
also
Instagram.
Have, and our email address is RealRomancePod@gmail.com if you want to drop anything our way.
So, but that's all we've got for you today. We're thinking next month for a theme mini, we're going to do, and I kind of just came up with this idea, so we may change it, but this is the idea we're playing with right now, is doing a theme mini about...
sports stars that transition into film and
right.
TV. Mostly
so,
film.
And what makes some of them successful, like The Rock, and what makes some of them not successful. I don't want to name names there.
Like Kane from See No Evil.
I said I didn't want to name names.
Well, I mean, he didn't exactly do a whole lot after that. But sometimes it's hit or miss. Much like the horror genre, much like a lot of the shows we watch, much like anything we do on this podcast, sometimes they hit, and sometimes See No Evil.
So if you like this episode, rate, review, subscribe on whatever network you're listening to.
Leave comments, leave feedback, do whatever you need.
Please give us some feedback.
We need to hear from you, folks. I don't care if you normally don't and you just listen to this. Just say, hey, liked the podcast. It would mean so much to us. We get, like, crickets every time we post. We hear nothing. We gotta get some feedback. We gotta know if it's working.
And if you really like it, send it to your friends and family.
Yeah, share it around because we are so freaking proud of this podcast. We're so happy with it.
I put a lot of work and I'm really proud of this episode. I think it was really good and I think that they are getting better every week.
Right, and then starting in season 3 next year, because we're probably going to take a couple month hiatus. Starting in season 3, I'm hoping that we transition more into the theme mini on a monthly basis instead of trying to do a theme mini and a themed episode.
I'm going to be taking a more active role. Not that I haven't already, but
yeah.
Like, it's literally going to become mine.
Your
basically.
Unpaid job.
Yes.
Volunteer work.
I mean, I would like money.
Yeah, money's always good. Pull it out of the podcast gods.
Is that a thing? How many virgins do I have to sacrifice?
Well, it all depends. Do you want her to survive?
I don't care as long as I don't live near her.
True that.
See, Jennifer didn't really affect the band that much. They still got to be successful. So,
this is true. Fuck Jennifer.
It doesn't even have to be a virgin if we want it, as long as we get successful.
Absolutely. Let her live with the demon. We don't care.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening to Theme Mini No. 2, only on Real Romance, brought to you by the Undercover Capes Podcast Network.